Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalecki. My next guest spent years working alongside Jay Leno as co-producer of both The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and The Jay Leno Show. His job? To track down and bring in the most powerful and influential, the most famous, and sometimes the craziest people in the world. His book, Behind the Curtain, An Insider's View of Jay Leno's Tonight Show, tells it all. It is a pleasure to say hello to Dave Berg. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is quite a pleasure. Let's start things off with how it started for you on the show. Your background was in news, NBC News and CNBC. So how did you end up working on The Tonight Show?
Well, I had something happen to me. I'm sure this never happened to you in radio. I got let go. I got fired from NBC News. So, and it just so happened that around that time, the new Tonight Show with Jay Leno, their staff was moving into an office right down the hallway from me, which I hadn't noticed because I had been so busy working at NBC News.
Mm-hmm.
So at the suggestion of my wife, I thought she was crazy, I went down and applied for a job. And I thought, what am I doing this for? This is ridiculous. I don't have a background in entertainment, but it turned out they were looking for someone with a journalism background. And two days later, I got hired. It was the easiest job I ever got, the hardest job I ever did.
Because they wanted to change the show a little bit, and this is why it was such a perfect fit for you. They wanted to bring in more in terms of politicians, more in terms of news people. That's how they were changing it from Johnny Carson's Tonight Show to Jay Leno's Tonight Show. And for you, I mean, talk about dovetailing, and the match couldn't have been more perfect.
It worked out well because it's something that was in Jay's wheelhouse. He had always done his monologue based on the day's events. Going back to, you know, two decades before that, he would do monologue jokes about topical events that were in the news that day. So it worked out well.
And it was different in terms of the guests, because you go back to Carson's Tonight Show, yeah, he would touch upon politics and current events in the monologue, but then we would veer back to simply just the actors and the singers and the comedians and stuff like that. But Jay decided to kind of take that to the next step. Now, working with and for Jay Leno, from reading the book, I get the idea he is the kind of guy you enjoy working for, and he's the guy whose company you enjoy while working with him.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, he is the blue-collar guy that he portrays himself to be. However, there's another side to Jay. It's not a dark side. It's just a different side. He's the quirkiest person I've ever known, absolutely quirkiest. We all know that he does, you know, that he wears denim.
Mm-hmm.
He does that all the time. Everybody knows that. But, you know, he also eats the same lunch every day. He eats the same dinner every night, lasagna. He just does these things the same way over and over. And the reason he does that, or the reason he did that, is he didn't want anything to interfere with what he thought was his most important job, which was putting together the monologue. So instead of spending 2 minutes, 3 minutes, picking a shirt for the day, he said, look, that's 3 minutes that gets taken away from my monologue.
And he would go home at night, and as he was cooking the lasagna, he would already start pulling ideas together for the next day's monologue.
He wanted to have half of his monologue jokes picked before he went into work on any given morning. He went through about 1,500 jokes.
Wow.
A day, and cut that down to 24.
That's amazing. I mean, yeah. Just the thought process to be able to generate so much material, and like 95% of it would be discarded anyway. I remember there's a funny little story in the book as well, where not that he was a numerologist, but he had a thing for numbers. And it turns out that he dated a few women, and they were all born on September 5th, and there was some woman that showed up at The Tonight Show, and they sort of hit it off, and he asked her when she was born, and if I remember correctly, she said September 5th.
That's right. She was a cartoonist. She wrote the cartoon Kathy, if you remember. And they were kind of hitting it off in the and I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and he, I know he wanted to have me there. When he asked, he said, "Don't take this the wrong way. I'm just curious. what day were you born? And it was September 5th.
Isn't that amazing? Wow. When you take a look at the years of The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, you also take a look at that parallel track over at CBS when David Letterman went over to start The Late Show. We know how it all started when Jay got the job on The Tonight Show and Dave left to go to CBS. A couple of things that you bring up in the book that really jump out at me. You mentioned differences between Jay's Tonight Show and The Late Show with David Letterman. Two things that jump out at me are that you and your co-producers cared more about the ratings and the audience. And you said that was something that was a striking difference between how you operated at Tonight and the way they operated back in New York on The Late Show. Explain to me the difference in that.
Yes, and I believe that was the crucial difference between the two shows. The Letterman show, they worked, the way they did it is they regarded David as an artist, a guy that just put it out there. Dave would be on his show, and he would react to things in the moment, and he would get grumpy or whatever he did, but he was producing comedic art, and that's the way his staff treated him. That's the way his staff regarded him. That's the way CBS promoted him, which is fine. It's a different approach. However, our feeling was, and this was driven by Jay Leno, who was a very brilliant businessman, I think. His feeling was the audience is always right, and he thought of the audience as customers, and, of course, the customer is always right.
Sure.
So his idea was you want to do material that appeals to the audience. If you do a joke and the audience doesn't laugh, Jay never reacted by saying, well, that's my joke, and if they don't get it, too bad. His feeling was, okay, what did we do wrong? Was my timing off? Was the joke not topical? Was it too esoteric? His feeling was, we have to fix our product. And that's the way we approached it. And by the same token, the writers and producers, we went over the ratings every single morning. And we knew, did the first guest perform well? If they lost more than 20% of the viewers, they didn't perform well. And that figured into the next time, we planned to book them.
I would imagine that's just good business. I mean, to be able to look at numbers, anyone that runs any kind of business looks at, how performance is. If you're going to treat it as this artistic endeavor where you're simply just worried about the art and how you feel about it, it kind of turns the whole thing inward. And I guess it's sort of insular after a while. If you don't really know what's going on in the world around you in terms of what people are feeling and reacting to your product, it makes for a much different situation. And it's pretty obvious in the ratings. And we talk about the ratings and the one get for you that turned the whole thing around ratings wise, Hugh Grant. His single appearance permanently changed The Tonight Show. Tell me about the process of how you got Hugh Grant after what was a very embarrassing situation for him publicly.
Well, he truly, truly was pivotal. And the background to this is when David Letterman first went on the air in 1993, he immediately shot to number one in the ratings and he stayed there for 2 years. Well, on July 10th, 1995, we did book Hugh Grant. He had a little problem in Hollywood. He was on Sunset Boulevard with a young lady.
Yes.
And they were visited by a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Divine Brown. And they were charged. And that story became viral at a time when the word viral didn't exist.
Right.
It was viral around the world. Well, fortunately for us, unfortunately for Hugh, we had booked him. Actually, it turned out to be fortunate for Hugh. We had already booked him on the show before the incident. So the challenge was not, we need to book Hugh. The challenge was to keep Hugh on the show because he didn't want to stay. He absolutely didn't want to stay. If you go back in time, just a few years, celebrities, when they used to get in trouble, they would sort of go hide in a corner. They would just sort of, try to wait till the storm blew over. And that's exactly what Hugh wanted to do. And our strategy was, look, we need to convince him that he needs to do a mea culpa, that his Hollywood career is absolutely on the line. And that's what we did. And Jay Leno himself got on the phone and said, look, you know me. I'm not going to throw you any curveballs. I really think it would be in your best interest to just apologize for this. And in turn, I won't make a big deal about it. I won't ask you salacious questions. In fact, I won't ask you any more than two questions about it.
And his question was pitch perfect. His tone was amazing because he literally sat there, brought him out and said, "What the hell were you thinking?" And I mean, it said so much. It was funny. And it allowed Hugh Grant the opportunity to do and say what he needed to. And it gave Jay the opportunity to kind of bring the thing up in a way that worked so well. And because of that, the mea culpa has become quite the thing to do, and it all leads back to that.
I really think that the modern-day mea culpa started right there.
Yeah, yeah, and that is what turned the tide ratings-wise for the show and carried it all those years.
Dave, stay with us. We're coming up on a break. More to come with Dave Berg. He was co-producer of The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Think green.
Harrison with you. For 8 years now, the USDA has been disposing of military nuclear waste by exposing grocery store hamburger to it because it happens to eradicate E. coli bacteria and insects. Michael Colby, former director, Food and Water.
That's 30 million chest x-rays is what was approved to expose our hamburger meat to.
Enough radiation to kill the host cow in under 10 seconds. At high radiation levels, America's massive deregulated meats are nuked for bacteria, staving off costly lawsuits from the 20,000-plus E. coli poisonings a year. Michael Colby.
You're going to take that fecal-contaminated piece of meat, and you're going to zap it with the equivalent of 30 million chest x-rays, and then we're going to call it safe.
Look for radiation's logoed flower with a circle around it on packaging.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This NL MVP slugged 339 homers, knocked in nearly 1,500 runs, and showed off one of the strongest arms in the outfield during his 19 seasons.
Throw at the plate. They got him.
So, where is Dave Parker now? Near the end of his career, Dave got into the fast food business. Today, the Cobra owns several Popeye chicken franchises in the Cincinnati area, where he partners with his wife, Kelly. She on the business side, Dave doing publicity. And Dave knows all about publicity. He starred in a 7-Up commercial during his playing days.
Hey, Dave Parker's turning 7-Up.
America is turning 7-Up.
Now aren't you thirsty? I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Tired of high cable bills? Disable the cable with MyTV. Call 888-759-MYTV. Get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. With packages as low as $19.99 for 4 rooms, you can't go wrong. Call now, 888-759-MYTV.